Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program, broadcast on the Community Radio Network. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and welcome to the third and final program on the life and times of 81-year-old Lily Miller. Born in 1925 in Lithuania, her mother was Russian and her father German, a combination with unfortunate consequences when the war broke out and the family was split up. For Lily, it was a great trial, but also a period of great personal growth. Surviving the trials of World War II, she attends a technical university and takes up metallurgy. She meets a musical student, Felix, marries him, and eventually migrates to Australia, where Felix had a bad accident at the steelworks at Port Kembla and eventually died as a result. Without a husband, and with young children, Lily draws on inner strength and with the support of people around her continues on. Her life and her story take on an amazing turn when through a series of circumstances she meets Dr. Joan Shively. Just how this meeting has such an effect on Lily will be revealed today. So settle back for the third and final part of the life and times of Lily Miller.
Felix had to work 2 years contract. Everyone had to be under contract.
What was he working as?
Oh, just whatever they gave him.
Whatever they gave him.
Mm. Yeah, and he finished up in steelworks in
Port Kembla?
Port Kembla.
Right, yeah. Yes.
And 2 years, not even 2 years, lasted when he got burnt his feet with an iron that came. The guy opened, he put this, he had to put the, whatever, you know, form and the wheel. The guy came driving with boiled steel,
yes,
and Felix had to put it, and he opened up beforehand, and he burned his legs, he got lead poisoning and died.
Oh, how...
And that was 2 years
tragic.
Later.
Tragic.
Yes.
Terrible. That must have been absolutely awful for you.
I haven't been there. You see, now I didn't know. I got to know later, not immediately, because this was no communication. You see, it wasn't like now. And then they brought Felix over. I didn't have money. So the camp collected money. And the priest and all, you know, that we buried him in Kaura.
Oh. So here you are, still basically a young bride. I mean, you hadn't been married that many, in a strange country,
yeah,
and your husband is dies through an accident.
Yeah, and I was in camp 4.5 years.
On your own?
Yeah, with 2 children.
That must have been a very trying period for you.
Well, yes, it must have been. But I had a lot of help from people. You see, we all were together.
Where did you find the strength to keep going?
I don't know. I must have been like that.
Yes, indeed. What was life like in the camp for you?
Life?
What was it like living in a camp like that?
Well, we had a little room. All the family was in one room. 2 beds. And 2 little cots, like for children. The kitchen was for everybody. You went in the kitchen to have your breakfast and your lunch, everything. You couldn't cook anything. There was nothing. Only in the kitchen. Somehow we survived.
Mm.
You know, when you come from stricken war where you had no food.
Of course.
That was luxury.
Of course.
First time ever we had a chop. And I couldn't believe what was that.
Of course not. We forget that of course, Europe was devastated.
There
so
was
no matter
nothing.
How bad we think the camps were, they were an improvement in many
Terrific.
Ways.
Because we had hardly anything.
Of course. So how did you get on your feet? I mean, the camp took up a collection for you, but that wouldn't have lasted forever.
No, that was only for the funeral.
Exactly.
I have now. Well, I got the money for children. Whatever that was.
Yes.
Food was there. I didn't have to pay.
Okay.
I didn't have to pay. Later on, because we had a lot of children, they had to have kindergarten and schools. It was all in Kaura camp. Mm. And a lady from Canberra, a migrant, you know, from the migration department, they were searching for people with some education, some knowledge, whatever. And I was lucky to go through, and I got a job as a kindergarten teacher.
All right.
There are a few. And so we ran a kindergarten. So that paid me, I don't know, what was it, £4 or whatever. I had a bit of pocket money. I could go in summer swimming with a bus, take the kids to swimming pool and all that. But that's how we lived.
Where did you go when you eventually left Kaura?
Where I went?
Hmm.
Yes, I tell you where. In camp, I met some Italian families, because I speak Italian too. And they went to Melbourne. We were good friends, the whole family. And they promised, said, because I was by myself, I couldn't get out at all. My immigration department wouldn't allow you to go anywhere unless you got papers.
Hmm.
And where to live and a job. That, then they will give you the ticket, give you some pocket money, and say you can drive wherever you want to go. Security. So what happened? Those people promised they will help me, and they did. When they went to Melbourne, after wherever they got in Fitzroy, Moore Street, lovely places, they got a lot of Italians living there, and they were very kind. They looked after me, they signed, they gave me papers, and they had space where to go and to keep me there. And I could go and find a job in Melbourne, which I did.
Listen to Older Voices, Living History on Ageless Radio.
Now I had two children.
Mm-hmm.
So when they sent me the papers, I went to the immigration department and all, and I got the money. I took the kids, came to Melbourne. They met me. Everything was fine. Then I had to get the children. And because my husband, Polish, Catholic, there was in Essendon, nuns from Canada brought in, Polish people. And I went to see them, and I got them into the school there, and it was like a boarding school. So I left Victor and Irene there in a boarding school, and there was a school when they started to go to school, the age, and I went to work. I worked at Astor Corporation. I got the job.
All right.
But there was not enough money, you see. It was very bad because I had to pay £2 for my board.
Mm-hmm.
And the most of money was £9.12. And I had to pay for my children £5.
Well, that was a lot of money.
See?
Mm.
So I left £2.
Goodness.
And I used to go by bus to South Melbourne, Astor Corporation, and I walked back home. Because then I had time, see, to have money.
Yes.
And as it went, I worked there for 6 months or so, and I got sick. And so the Astor Corporation had a nurse and all, and she said, I think we send you better to Women's Hospital to check what's wrong. I just was run down.
Mm.
Anyway, I went. And as I went to Women's Hospital, they did a certain test. They thought maybe I was playing up or something, where I'm sick, you know, woman. And then I met a doctor, young woman doctor, and she looked at me and she said, you know, nothing is wrong with you. You are totally run down.
Yes.
That you need food.
Yes.
And I sat there and looked at her, and she said, you know, it was like, you know, a fairy tale. And she said, you come and live with me.
Goodness.
I got a daughter, and we need somebody to look after her. And I think her daughter was a bit older than my 13 years or 12. And I was, Victor was only 5, 6, maybe at 8, and Irene was 5. Anyway, and I thought she was joking. I got a husband. Husband is working. I'm working. I'm just first year of medical doctor, just finished. And she said, I want you to come. We live in Windsor, next to the station. You get a train and you come and you will have food and everything. And you will take care of my daughter and that will pay you everything. I thought that was a fairy tale. I couldn't do it. I didn't know what to do. So I just left it. I thought, I couldn't, what could I do? So I went back to work, and it went. She said, you let me know. I will wait for you. Gave me the address and this and that. And so 2 weeks later at work, the nurse came to me and said, somebody wants to see you as a corporation. I said, oh, yeah, I wonder who it was. Mm-hmm. I came in, and there it was in the office with a nurse sitting, Joan Schiavone, the doctor.
Goodness me.
And she looked at me and said, I'm waiting for you. That was Joan. So she said, I will pick you up. You didn't come to me. I'm waiting. And the nurse laughed, and they clicked together because they knew each other somewhere from before.
Yes,
see?
Yes.
Through the nurses and the doctors and all. And so I thought, God, heaven, said, you go home tonight, pack everything, I can pick you up tomorrow. And that was it. And she did that.
Goodness me.
And so I went to Windsor. And the kids were in Essendon, and Friday nights from work, I used to go and pick them up, bring them home, and then take them back on Sunday night. So I said, bring the children, we like the children, we love the children and all. And so the kids were very happy, and I lived there with her for years.
Goodness me.
Till such time that I got into Monash Medical School.
Now tell us about that. What did that involve?
Medical school? Well,
you actually went to medical school?
Yeah, I worked there in laboratory because I had the metallography experience.
Of course.
Lab, microscope and all this. And I stuck there 20 years. Till 1980.
Amazing.
I started the Monash Medical School 63.
Mm-hmm.
And Joan was, and of course, with Melbourne University, she lectured microbiology and all that. And I worked at the microbiology department. And it was very, because I had the microscope, you know, and
yes,
doing research, like for the students preparing for the class and all that,
yeah,
you know, was very, very interesting.
I was going to say, if you were there 20 years, you must have enjoyed it.
Oh, it was lovely. It was nothing better. Even we had a meeting only 2 weeks ago on Friday, we'll be in Mount Eliza again, the group of us, you know.
Yes.
It changed a lot now, but we went through a few professors. And the last one was Professor Schmidt. But now it's different arrangement because everything is changed. You know, the buildings changed because the research changed.
Of course.
Yes, the stem cells and all that, you know. We went a few years ago right through and they showed us whoever works there too. It's so different, cool, everything computers, you know.
Mm.
So when we celebrated last time at the Monash campus and at the tea room where we were, and I said, They did the buildings, everything, but the curtains are still the same. All 20 years later. They looked horrible. You know, there I am sitting.
Oh, dear.
Yes, it was good. So that was my... Then...
I see you somewhere around. I don't know when though. I'll never know when I'm back in town.
And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
I'm remarried in the meantime again.
Where did you meet your second husband?
Second husband I met in Melbourne. Can't remember now exactly, in the 60s, through friends. And he was English, Don Miller, his name. He was married, but his wife separated, was become Jehovah's Witness, and he just was left alone. And I had a friend that knew him from Astor Corporation way back then, And said, you know, we got something very interesting. You might meet. And that's how it sort of started.
What was his name, sorry?
Hmm?
What was your second husband's name?
Don Miller.
Don, okay.
Don, yeah. And so we stuck together and we married. Was very happy. The best man ever. Very nice.
What was Don like? Tell us a bit about him.
He was in engineering.
Mm-hmm.
He had problem with a hip operation, and as a child he was born in Pakistan. Abbottabad. His parents, as you know, English, and his father was in the army, and all the children born in Egypt or India. So Don was in India, the last one, and because he had problems with elbow, the joints and hip, and their parents had to come to Australia.
Yes.
Earlier, when he was about 8, because in India they couldn't operate. That belonged to India then, yes. Now we say yes. Pakistan. And that sort of got him going, and still in the later years he had back hip problem, but his leg never grew in the same length, so he had to have a boot and all. But then, of course, when his wife turned to be Jehovah's Witness, all this problem with the hip and all operations, she could not sign the papers, blood transfusion. So he had to depend on his mother and all of that, the separation.
Yes, yes.
Yes, separated them. And I met through the other friend and introduced and this, and we become good friends. And I thought, well, he was a lovely man, loved music, everything was good looking and brainy and it's interesting and everything, a good business and all. And he passed away when we came here to Emerald. Got a stroke, got a heart attack. That was, he died 83.
In some ways, it might sound a bit strange, especially for people listening when I say this, but in some ways you were very fortunate. It sounds like you met two very lovely men in your life.
Yeah.
Which a lot of women would feel themselves fortunate if they found one.
No, I was really, when I think it, I learned a lot.
Mm.
And they're different, but always some music was involved, and I like music. I like opera. You know, that I never be alone. I just put the record down and I'm happy.
Now, coming right up to recent times,
yeah,
I know you through the Emerald Community House,
yeah,
and there you teach Qigong.
Yes.
How did you get involved with Qigong yourself?
I started to do yoga 63.
Right.
So I thought, see, they got their yoga degree, yes. And I got here holistic massage.
Oh, right. So you've actually been involved in yoga and things like this for over 40 years.
Yes, and I did yoga, started community house.
Right, you started
yoga. I did in
there.
A lounge where you got now all the, you know, the equipment.
Computers and things.
That's where we did yoga.
You obviously enjoy still teaching.
Yeah. I do.
Yes.
Yes. And then we went over and did, because the class got bigger and they tried to do something else in the community, a house there, and because they didn't have the children's thing yet, then we did in that, what do you call it? It's like a church building.
Oh, the hall.
The hall. That was also used to be church.
Yes.
They had, I don't know whether it was Christians or Uniting Church, but I know there was always nicely, so every Sunday there was a mass. So we did our yoga there, and we did some massages, all kind of things. And
Is yoga and Qigong a part of your everyday life?
I do. I think so. It's very important.
Why is it important to you?
It keeps me fit.
Yes.
Keeps me balanced.
Yes.
And I shared with people.
That's like for good reasons, yes.
I like to look in Berwick now. I've got some people that they wouldn't like to be without it.
Yes.
And they've been 10 years with me.
10 years?
Yeah.
Well, that says something about them and you.
Yeah. And it all comes, some of them go away, we get something happens, or they leave the place or so, but always new ones coming in. Mm. And some of, even I said today, Laurel, do you know that you came to Emerald Community House? We did it in Beaconsfield, Upper Beaconsfield, some scout hall big thing, and then we gave it up there because they used to have party smoke, you know, and buds everywhere, nobody cleaning. Mm. So we went to, somebody said, let's go to Berwick, to the citizen, and she belonged. Anyway, we stuck with that.
Mm.
So it's very nice.
So even though you no longer work now for a living in terms of a profession, you're still very active.
Yes. And I don't think I could stop it.
No, I don't think you could either. Lily, I think our time is up. Can I thank you very much for sharing some of your life with me? It's been an absolute delight. Thank you.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Turek Times.